A good part of this book is devoted to reconstructing the fire itself, which is really horrifying reading. I mean, it's very graphic. It's very painful to read. So talk about the kind of research that went into that. That was very painstaking, I thought.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a reconstruction that was most important to me, and that was a part of a reconstruction that I feared doing because it was so intense. There would be moment to moment from it. I should say that the whole book essentially the first act of the book works to build tension up to that point. I want to place the characters, individuals who experienced that historical event by that time in the key setting. And I dreaded what had to happen next in the plot of the book, essentially because I didn't want to do what followed. It was so sad to me. I couldn't avoid what happened next. And then I had this strange fantasy of, what if I let these wonderful men and women all out of this room? What if I gave them all the reprieve they deserved rather than the fate that actually met them? But alas, I was not writing fiction, right?
Right.
So I buckled down, and there was an array of primary source documents. There were police reports that enabled, there were mappings. There was a series of four or five different maps of the layout of the upstairs lounge. And then I was able to cross-reference those with about a dozen or so interviews of personal recollections of what happened in that span of time and in the minute. And from there, I attempted to, from the cross-referencing of it, create a kind of Venn diagram on a timeline for what happened almost second to second, because that was important to me. I wanted the reader to understand how quickly a fire like this progresses across the room and how a person has about 30 seconds to make one choice to run one way or another. And in that choice, unfortunately, lies their fate, lies life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted the moment-to-moment experience of each of the individuals who were inside the bar at the span of time to be as harrowing as they were, as the individuals had related their stories to me.
And then after the fire, the official response takes up a good bit of this book. It was such a signal moment. I think people who had never dealt with the tragedy of that proportion had no idea what to do, and so much of what happened after was totally unsatisfactory. I mean, you take to task the city, you take to task religious institutions. It was a new kind of event for the media to cover. Tell us a little bit about that, about writing about that.
Sure. This is where the context of the event I tried to reconstruct as fairly as I possibly could. And it was, I'll be honest, it was a challenge for me. I'm a gay person. And so I wanted to state what occurred in 1973 within the accurate context of what were the beliefs that people had about homosexuality in 1973, and how would those beliefs have contributed to or resulted in behavior that followed the fire, which was an out-of-ordinary experience. It was an emergency. It was a disaster. So the city had experienced, and I'm sure you've heard a couple of these things before, had experienced several disasters quite recently. There was the Rault Center fire, which was a terrible fire at an office tower that killed six people.
Mm-hmm.
That was in late 1972. In early 1973, there had been a shooting at the downtown Howard Johnson, where seven people were killed. And I wanted to compare those two realities, which actually a very wonderful author named Clayton Delery, who became one of my mentors in the course of writing this book, did such an excellent job delving into and setting up those historic antecedents. Those two things were, what was the city reaction to those two events, which was widespread sympathy, public officials coming forward to lead the event on the ground as the emergency is occurring, religious leaders stepping forward to offer effusive sympathies, and the public stepping forward in its own way to donate blood, to donate money to victims, to care about the memorial funds, to care about funerals, etc. And following the upstairs lounge fire, none of those things occurred. And it was painful to reconstruct because I wanted to do this in a fair way, but to a certain extent, you were always, as a historian, you were bound by the facts of what occurred, too. And through the research meted out, I had a question about where the mayor was following the fire. This is Mayor Moon Landrieu, who is in many ways a very storied civil rights leader in the history of New Orleans. and in many ways a very admired man who I've actually interviewed over the course of this book to get his background on civil rights and to get his background to understand what was the state of belief around homosexuality in 1973. Through the research, I found, unfortunately, where Mayor Landrieu was at a certain span of time. He was in Europe on a trip where he was doing research into Armstrong Memorial Park, and he was in a location where he was relatively in contact with individuals back home in New Orleans. It would be virtually impossible while he was on his trip in Europe to not have heard about a fire that occurred that killed 32 people. And yet the mayor did not cut his trip short to come back home and tend to a grieving community, because in a sense, the community was not grieving over this. He instead came home weeks later at a time when really he could be of no practical use to the victims or survivors or families who had been affected by the fire, and didn't really speak about the fire. And at a press conference in mid-July, which was a part of the weekly press conferences that he held where he would meet with local publications, when he was forced by a journalist named Bill Rushton to acknowledge the homosexual angle to the tragedy, his response was that he was not aware of any lack of concern in the community.